Next, we'll have Professor Dorothy Kidd. She's a professor of media studies here at USF, and she'll be discussing the role and of the youth in social media tools.
Thank you, everybody. It's a great privilege to be here tonight, partly because it's been so absolutely exciting to be able to witness what's been going on in Egypt in the last month. And it's a privilege for me to be here. I spent about a week in the Cairo airport when there was a war on between India and Pakistan when I was very young, and I never got anywhere closer. It seems a little odd to be here and not have the kind of experience that all of the other speakers have had. So what I'm going to say is quite honestly that what I can talk to you about is having been an activist and an organizer and worked with communications, and I hope face this with a little bit of intellectual humility and talk about some of the questions that we might want to ask ourselves about the role of media in organizing for social change. I especially want to thank the Muslim Students Associations in Yala for making this possible. And in fact, some of the points that I'm going to make about why I think this was successful in Egypt are what's going on in this room tonight. I think that the revolution in Egypt represented a convergence. It represented an important convergence that not only crossed old and new media, which is what I know a little bit about, but crossed old and new ways of organizing, of making social change, crossed, obviously, between women and men and women and men's organization, crossed generations between young people and older people, crossed class between people who've been organizing in Egypt for many, many years, and younger people of, as you said, your brother said, higher socioeconomic situations, university students. And I think more so crossed cyberspace and real public civic space, and used that crossover, used that trend, convergence to really open up what's really the challenge of people in Cairo and the challenge of all of us right now. How do we actually take our democracy back? How do we take it back in Wisconsin? How do we take it back at USF? How do we take it back in San Francisco? And thank you so much, everybody in Cairo, for inspiring me to even imagine these ideas and pose the question of all of us taking democracy back. I think that's what inspired so many people around the world. So I was asked to speak about social media and youth. It's been a long time since I was a youth, but we'll see how we can spill that in. I want to start off by just asking, you know, the whole, I could say more about the Twitter revolution, but I just want to ask you a question. You know, If one was to call the American Revolution the pamphlet revolution, I think that's really the kind of way that people are thinking about that. The American Revolution was partly made possible by pamphlets. The power of the people who made those pamphlets, some of us from outside of the United States, is partly the reason why it's the First Amendment and there's protection of the press. Not of all of the people to be able to express themselves to all of the people, but of the press. And yes, media has an important role, but it's a limited role. Media are what mediate between people, and that's what I want to talk about. I think what, and I have some other things I could say about the role of Facebook in trying to provide a lost leader around the world at this very moment and brand themselves as an accessible media for everybody has a role here. I'm not going to talk about that now. Same with Twitter. I want to talk more importantly about the kinds of questions that we need to ask in every single occasion. So Cairo represented a moment of convergence between social networks, political groups, media and technologies, and also people throughout North Africa and Europe, North America, and Latin America. It provided an important link between public space, cyberspace for grassroots, as Professor Zunis was saying, and more inclusive democracy, a recognition that change had to come from the grassroots with all of the people and all of the issues involved. And it represented, and I think it was, many of my colleagues have been saying this already, it represented, and I think this is the reason why it resonates, it represented a common experience of oppression by the Mubarak regime and the police. What I heard a lot of people say, the concept of dignity, that people felt like they had no dignity. This is exactly what people in Latin America have been saying for the last 20 years. They call it la dignidad. And it's the same kind of concept of we share the experience of not being valued by the people who say they are governing us. People in Cairo also shared common experiences of austerity, of a declining standard of living, of a rising cost of bread, of a recognition of, as Professor Zunis was saying, that this was not accidental from the market, but it was actually a result of speculation in food, and that it meant that people, and you heard this over and over and over again, people were getting poorer, the rich were getting richer, corruption was becoming endemic, and people, and I heard this several times, especially from young people, even university-educated young people, were not able to afford housing, to get married, to have jobs that had a future. Now, I think that's also one of the reasons why the experience of Cairo is resonating with those of us in this room. Common experiences of austerity, not being able to afford a house, not being able to have a future in terms of employment, and for some of us, not being able to get married. But I'm not sure that the people in Cairo quite saw that the same as those of us who were not heterosexual. But anyways, so I think that's another thing, is the common experience of austerity. The other thing was the common experience of what many of my colleagues in media studies calls the democratic deficit of the news media, of a very highly controlled press, of not being able to, A, get news in or get news out, of an absence of reporting of the issues that have substance to ordinary people in Egypt. And again, this is something we share in this country, a democratic deficit of the news media. And I was going to talk about the news media coverage of this. Got lots of notes on that. I can talk about it afterwards, but I'm actually going to shorten things because it's been a long night and I just want to talk about media. But I think that's something that people shared in Cairo and they share in San Francisco, and that's one of the reasons why people rush to use whatever technologies are available, whether that's the floor of the mosque, whether that's ham radio when the internet was shut down, whether that's cell phones, whether that's Facebook, whether that's Twitter. It's the desire and the human need, I would say, to have to express what's not only going on for you individually, but what you understand is common to you and needs to be changed. And I think one of the other common things, and I'm underlining common is actually the root word for communications. So I think when we talk about communications, we got to get beyond thinking about it as some kind of objects of technology, but actually those technologies mediate what is a common between us as human beings. That's what communications is about. And one of the other common, what was also in common, was the recognition of using the social networks that are available to people. Everybody over there, on the platform and many people here. How many of you use Facebook as your primary way of connecting with people? Okay, so that's a good quarter of the crowd. And this is a common social network. What's also necessary to talk about is, again, what kinds of social networks people used in Cairo when surprise, surprise, Mubarak figured out very quickly how to pull the internet down, and there was no cell phones. So what did people use? They used pamphlets, going back to the American Revolution, handing out printed pieces of paper. They used face-to-face communication, which people always use and is probably something that all of us use 100%. They used the mosques and the churches and the other places of faith. They used, when the internet came back on, from what I understand, they used the sports fan links, mass people getting together. They used cafes. They used universities. They used workplaces, which I think are people using the word syndicate. Those are workplaces, and they use the street. And if anything, I think that I'll go on from there. The other thing that I think is in common that we haven't yet talked about is we've talked about Tunis to Cairo to Bahrain to Iran and whatever, but we haven't talked about the fact that young people and old people in Egypt have a habit of reaching out beyond Egypt to try and get the news of what's going on in their own country from outside and also what's going on in other countries. Internationalism or transnationalism or translocalism. And one of the things that we saw tonight, you could tell from the accents of people, was the connection, the international connection around the diasporas of various kinds. Are extremely important in terms of using social networks. If you can't use the internet and Facebook, you can phone out, and maybe your relatives in Brussels or New York can then put it on Facebook and Twitter. And let me remind you, that's actually what happened in Iran during that period of time when the media talked about it as the Twitter and Facebook revolution. There were only a couple thousand people in all of Iran that had Twitter accounts and could access them. So what did they do? They phoned out, and then it got radiated around the rest of the world. And that's partly an important thing that we need to think about in the long run. And the other thing that I think is important, and I wanted to emphasize this, and some of my colleagues were talking about this before, is this is not the first time. There were already common historical experiences of struggle. The students had used this square, I think, in 1972, if I'm not correct. More recently, there have been protests and demonstrations stepping up in Cairo since 2005. So this was the culmination of 6 or 7 years of protracted street struggle, cyber struggle, and the struggle of people to widen the franchise of democracy to everybody so that everybody could say, now I can call it my Egypt again. That's about democracy and about including everybody. And also making sure that people could widen the topic of what was important to fight for in terms of social change. So it was not just what university students were blogging about in terms of when they were doing protests, the kinds of attacks they were facing from the police, the kinds of arrests they were facing from the police that have been happening systematically since 2005. But they figured out that they weren't the center of it. They also had to talk about austerity. They had to talk about neoliberal programs. They had to talk about things that were common to all of the people in Cairo. So when they started blogging, and this is when I started following it in 2005, you started to get a little bit of information in the Western media about bloggers and heroic bloggers, and yes, they were heroic, and they did get arrested, and that was the case. And when they started to get arrested, they realized, okay, now let's get inventive. Let's go into the streets and start talking to people one by one, face to face. Let's talk about rents. Let's talk about transport prices. Let's talk about food prices. Let's listen, even more so in terms of communication. Let's listen to ordinary people to find out what concerns are important for them. And that's what I think the real brilliance of some of the young people in the national movement, Kafaya, and some of the other movements were, they realized they could use their skills as university-trained students to reach back in history, to start articulating for people how this all came about. And they could use their humility to start asking people what was important to them, and then put it on all the SMS texting, put it on email, put it on Facebook, put it on Twitter, put it on cell phones, make photos of it, video it. They realized that in 2005 when the youth wing was formed. They realized that media and communications was important, but they realized it was important to mediate between the people of Egypt and themselves and the people outside. Just a little background, 86% of Egyptians have a television. This is maybe a year or two old. So they had access to Al Jazeera and other Arab regional services. It is true the Egyptian government subsidizes internet access. Surprise, surprise, that means that they can then take it away really fast. And there are internet cafes with 4.2 million users, but Egypt has 80 million people. So we need to think about that. Cyberspace is still only available to a minority of people. Internet access and PC ownership remains almost exclusively available to the upper and upper middle classes. There are a high percentage of cell phone use. And you know what? I tried to figure, just an aside, I went to Google, which of course everybody uses now, including me, and the first page was all ads for how I could get a cell phone in Egypt. So I never did figure out the percentage of cell phone users, but somebody can figure that out. Just some background. So I just want to underscore some of those common struggles, and then I'm going to wrap up. And I think this is something that I want to go back and read more about, because it's really exciting to hear. As I said, the square was last occupied by the 1972 student movement, who were calling for equitable economic and social and political system. It's kind of a rerun, right? The 2003 anti-Iraq war protests are considered a moment, a watershed moment, of people in Egypt to rise up and demonstrate. Of course, they weren't successful there, they weren't successful here, but they got a core of people organizing together. So that by 2004, 2005, there was the beginning of the youth movement with Kafaya, the movement of the Egyptian Movement for Change, or Enough. And as I said, they recognized the importance of culture, of media, of communications, of being able to reach out. They began to use blogging. They started up alternative news websites. When that didn't work and they got shut down, they went to the streets. They also, and I think this is important, something I'd like to find out more about, and this I'd ask the questions for those of you from politics. They also realized that the old way of making politics wasn't working, which was mainly intellectuals critiquing the government and saying how it was corrupt, the legal system needed to be widened. What the young people realized was that the older people's focus on regime change was actually impeding the elaboration of a practical agenda, that they needed to demand to link their daily problems with the problem of governance and of the government, to explain to people that they have certain rights, and then to listen to people expressing to them how their particular situations, whether it was transport costs or food or employment and whatever, how they all connected. And that was a very different kind of politics than we see not just in Egypt but in a lot of places, which is, you know, a handful of intellectuals critique what's wrong, they put it forward to the government, and President Mubarak and his aides say, very interesting, thank you very much, and nothing happens. So I'm going to just whip through this. Oh, yeah. One other thing I want to say is that the last thing I want to say is that I found this quote that just kind of got me thinking about the problems with Facebook activism. And it comes from an Egyptian blogger who said, "We, the Egyptian bloggers, have always prided ourselves on the fact that we have one foot on the ground, in the street organizing, and the other in cyberspace. But this time, it seems some have thrown both their feet as well as their brains into cyberspace and are living in some kind of virtual reality, mistakenly believing, helped by the media sensationalist coverage of the Facebook activism, that they are the ones behind the events. So it's just a criticism that I read that kind of got me thinking about this kind of events. So I'm going to leave it there. I know my time's up. I want you to think about always what we have in common with one another in terms of common networks, common issues that are important for us, common analyses that are important for us, and common demands that we can make that unite all of us across all of the barriers that fragment us. Thank you very much.